You are live,
okay.
Brother.
All right. You've had 24 hours to think about some of the things you've been talking about, so I'm going to try to pause. But I know maybe some of you weren't here last night, but it was a good summary of what we talked about. But we kind of left it that maybe we could kind of keep our eyes peeled and look for things. I don't know if there was anything that you... It's kind of almost hard to keep it in mind as you go back out in the world. I know somebody mentioned yesterday it was kind of unusual to see a couple of boys with fishing poles going on bicycles, which just seems kind of a rare event anymore. And you see people on their cell phones all the time. I don't know. Is there anything that you see in... I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but is there anything that you see that you think kind of sums up a lot of what's going on, some of the things we talked about last night? I don't know if you've had time to think about it or not. I think, good.
One other thing I see that still amazes me is when every kid in the room has a different electronic device they're using.
Yeah.
One might be a tablet, one might be a, it may be a different kind of thing.
Right. You know, it's kind of funny. We may have time to end up talking about this, the generation thing. It's now becoming to where it used to be, it was the, sneering kid in the back row, tuning out the world. Now it's everybody. It's not just the young people. Everybody has their device. And it's not just...
Four-year-olds.
Yeah, 4-year-olds, 75-year-olds. Everybody's kind of tuned in to different things. And, of course, there's exceptions to everybody. I came across something I had read not too long ago that I didn't mention yesterday, and it had something to do with what we talked about, and then we'll talk about some other things tonight. But one of our basic premises, I guess, for this class is that we have too much stuff, we're doing too many things, and we're moving too fast. And the argument is that maybe that's keeping us skimming the surface of life and really neglecting our true purpose, kind of like Martha was, so caught up in everything, and Jesus kind of called her on that and said, hey, you need to relax. There's really only one thing that's important. But a lot of it has to do with, just sheer number of possessions. There's nothing wrong with having a lot of stuff, but here's some things you might find interesting about our situation in 21st century United States. And again, like I mentioned yesterday, no particular time or place is going to be overwhelming, or I'm not a doomsdayer. But there are some things that are unique about our situation. If you were to go back in time to colonial America and you would show up for an auction, sometimes when people would die, they would get all their possessions and they would count them and then they'd auction them off. On average, it was about 40 to 50 items belonging to certain people. At the most, maybe 75. You think you have more than 75 things at home, probably? Probably 75 spoons, probably. This guy, and so tying in with this I haven't found it yet, but there's a book, I guess it's called Material World, and this photographer went all over the world, and he would try to find in that country a family that represented the middle class. And he said, I want you, if you don't mind, get everything in your house and bring it out front, stack it outside, and then I'm going to take a picture of you with your stuff. And so it was kind of interesting. A wild and wide variety, you can imagine. On the average, this is middle class in a variety of nations. On the average, it was 127 things. There was one, I remember, it was a small country, I think in Africa, and the kids' toys, they had found a couple of batteries. And this is middle class. There was a couple of dishes, that was about it. And then some of the other higher end stuff, maybe in India, there was a broken bicycle and things like that. When they got to America, they found their middle class representatives and they had to bring all their stuff out. They had to rent a cherry picker, one of those things that lift you up. They had to rent a cherry picker for the photographer to stand in and raise them up high enough to get everything. They filled the cul-de-sac that they lived in with their stuff, and there was still stuff in the house that they couldn't get outside to fit into the picture. You know where I'm headed with this. We just have a bunch of stuff. And I think it's kind of strange that we don't think that's strange. I don't know. And I'm not going to suggest it's all time to go home and have one giant garage sale and, live in a hut in the mountains or something. But it's just worth noticing. Like we talked about yesterday, there's some things about our situation. It's hard to see because we're too close. Like that guy said, if you want to know what water is, don't ask a fish. It's hard for us to really take a step back and say, wait a second, what do these things mean? What do they have to do with my life? You have any thoughts on that before we continue on? We're going to kind of shift gears. In fact, I started to say And we're going to change channels, and that's exactly what we're going to do, literally. I'm going to talk about one of your best friends. I'm going to talk about one of your best friends. Some of you were raised by this guy. It's called television. I know you probably have some thoughts on it. You've lived long enough to have seen it changed a little bit. And as Christians, of course, it's one of those things you have to kind of take a look at. So we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about it. When it was first invented, you may know this, there was some concern when it first showed up. You probably heard it almost as a joke now that it's going to rot your brain. You've probably heard that, that it's going to ruin your eyes. The prediction was that it would make theaters obsolete. Interestingly enough, the theaters that just made millions of dollars last weekend, they thought television would shut those down. So it was one prediction that didn't turn out to be true. After a while, people stopped asking about how television would affect people, because that was a question on people's minds, just people in the world, let alone Christians. So I wonder what this device is going to do to us. And it quieted down the discussion. And you know why? It wasn't because we came up with an answer. It's because it became so part of our lives, we don't even see it anymore. For somebody to say, what do you think, how do you think television affects your life? It'd be like asking you, how do you think your ears, you know, affect your life? Do you have any thoughts on that? You don't even think about it anymore because it's so prevalent in our society. Whether it's good or bad or not, you know, it can depend. I imagine you can guess 99% of Americans have a television. Do you remember, did any of you grow up in a house that had one television? Maybe some of you do, okay. You know that that's not the case in most cases anymore. Everybody has their own screen. In fact, for the most part, we can carry around a television. You probably know when televisions first came out, there'd be one person, one family in the neighborhood, and then everybody would come over and watch the screen this big, and they'd, you know, gather together and watch this television. Now everybody has one in their room. We talked about yesterday, there's hundreds and hundreds of channels. So I'm going to suggest some things, and I'm going to pick your brain too, because we've all been around it, and I think there's probably some things we've observed in ourselves, and maybe people. And again, the conclusion of this is not go home and throw away your television, but at least take a second look at it. In your mind, what do you think are some of the concerns before I get to the stuff? See, I kind of cheated. I prepared ahead of time. I'm springing this on you. So I'm curious, is there anything that kind of sticks out in your mind? Say one thing about television.
One thing I noticed, Brett, like with my family, we've had times where we've watched it more than others, you know, like probably everybody. There's been times where we've completely shut it down. And I can tell a major difference every time we've done that with my kids.
You mind telling us specifically what was the effect that you saw?
Just better communication. We were more connected. I mean,
okay.
I don't know, you know, how else to put it, but the family was more connected. And I've noticed that more than once.
Yeah, and I want you to know I'm not down on it. I totally agree with what you're saying. In fact, I'm standing right next to you. I also have heard people say, well, there's some shows we watch together and we kind of share them and we laugh together and we talk about one. And I understand that. So we're not saying it doesn't serve any purpose. But yeah, that seems to be the case. And sometimes when you turn off the television, all of a sudden you have conversations with real people and it's different. It's easier to turn on the television. It's smart, yeah.
It's really hard to do sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, it's becoming more and more rare for a family to sit around at a table. Many people have really drawn attention to that, saying that's where you find out what's going on in your family's life, as you sit there and you talk about your day. But television, that's one of the side effects. The guy who invented it didn't think, well, this device will probably take away family time and cause people to kind of divide up and eat their meals separately. Nobody thought that, but that's what's happened. So yeah, these are worth noticing for whatever it might be worth. Anything else, Randy?
Yeah, I think you can really absentmindedly let things in your home that you would not otherwise allow to.
Well, you mean because of television, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. In fact, that's one of the key things we're going to talk about. We'll head that way exactly.
I saw this thing. Solid family, and then their uncle wanted to come live with them. and they came in, he came in and he cussed, and they kind of looked the other way. He, you know, talked immorally. He did all these things that they wouldn't have let, like Randy said. But then the little picture, it was a picture that I saw, and then they, it said, well, replace this uncle that they let in their house with your television set.
Yeah. That kind of changed my perspective. That's a great analogy. You say, okay, what if you had somebody come over and he started doing and saying the things that are on television? You would not stand for it. Whatever decision you make at that point, you know, I guess it depends. But it's worth noticing there's some parallels there that might make you pause and find the off button, like somebody mentioned yesterday. I'll go ahead and say this too. I don't know if you know this. TV is designed, the one thing that producers want to do more than anything is to keep you from changing the channel or turning it off. I don't know if you noticed one change that's happened in the recent years is one show flows right into the next. It used to be they'd wrap up the show, then there'd be this block of commercials, and then the next show, but they stop the show, and then there's this little extra thing at the end to keep you watching because you know it's coming, and then they go right into the next show. And that's strategy to keep you from turning off your television. They stick dumb shows between good shows. Have you noticed that? The primetime stuff, if they're trying out one that's not that good, they stick it in the middle because they know you don't have the strength to hit that off button. So they know what they're doing. I'm not saying they're trying to brainwash you. I just want you to be aware there's more going on than meets the eye. One thing you probably know about is our attention span. We've got all kinds of excuses and things about why we are the way that we are. But some people suggest that we are trained, which we're pushing our luck right now, going past 20 minutes having a conversation like that is probably going to lose people. You know why? Because that's the distance between commercials. And that's kind of what we're trained to pay attention for so long, and then we're done. And unfortunately, the world feels that they have to submit to that rather than helping each other aspire to paying attention longer. That's one possibility. Something that ties in with what you guys were saying, I like the way this one guy put it. He said, one problem with television, it tells secrets. If you go to Ephesians 5, one person suggests that one of the reasons there's no more secrets in our culture is because of television. Little kids are seeing stuff that they would have never seen decades before. You know what parental discretion means when they put that up there? That means now you're really going to want to watch it. It doesn't mean, how many kids do you think say, wait, okay, let's go check. I know that there are kids that do that, but that just means, okay, here's the good stuff. Ephesians 5:12 says, it's shameful even to mention what the disobedient do in secret. Ephesians 5:3, and tell me if I get any of these wrong. But among you there must not even be a hint of sexual immorality or of any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. We talk about it, you know, some of the shows that we watch. It's kind of extra dangerous when they kind of get you to laugh at things, which we'll get into here in a second. But there's kind of a decline in shame. You know, things that are on television now that we're chuckling about, 20 years ago, they would have been canceled because people would have risen up and said, how dare you put this on television? And now it's nothing. We don't even blink anymore. Jeremiah 6, you might find this kind of an intriguing verse. It's Jeremiah 6:15. See, the argument is, I don't know if you notice, childhood is kind of fading. The line is being blurred in the clothes that are sold and the things that are presented to kids. It's more and more of an adult nature. To the point that some people fear the loss of childhood. There's some concerns about that. But at Jeremiah 6:15, who has that would like to read it? You might find this very relevant. Good, that's great.
Are they ashamed of their loathsome conduct? No, they have no shame at all. They do not even know how to blush. So they will fall among the fallen. They will be brought down when I punish them, says the Lord.
So notice that it says they don't know how to blush. Blushing is good. You know why you blush? Why do you blush? You're embarrassed. There's some shame. Doesn't mean necessarily you did something wrong, but there's this line in you. and say, no, I've crossed this line. It may not be something wrong, but I'm kind of some embarrassment there. He's saying they've lost that. There's nothing you can do that would make them blush anymore. Nothing to make them cringe. And again, we're not going to lay all this at the feet of television, but again, it's something to kind of keep in mind. You probably notice that on television, children are treated almost like adults, and adults in particular are treated as fools, especially the dad. You notice that?
Even the commercials.
What's that?
Even the commercials.
Yeah, even the commercials. The dad is the fool, and I know there's some foolish dads, but that's so wrong in treating the kids like they have some kind of insight on things. I'll share something very specific with you. I was at somebody's house, and they had a Disney show on, and it was a family show, and this little girl, she was like 7, had this older woman come to her little playhouse to give her advice on whether or not she should move in with this guy and live with him. And it was supposed to be, ha-ha, funny. She's talking about sin with this older woman as if it was for laughs. You also notice in movies that they think it's funny to have kids cuss and things like that. So there's some things, I don't know, as a Christian, you might want to take a second look at. As you mentioned, Carl, television was a person, we'd kick him out. In fact, 1 Corinthians 5:14 says, remove the wicked man. Of course, talking about a real person, if we were willing to relocate an actual human being, how much more a machine, or at least have the ability to turn it off? And I think that's the key, because I know of families who say, okay, absolutely no television. A lot of kids who grew up in those houses, anytime they're around one, they're just, you know, so obsessed with it because they've never been around it. But it's a matter of control, maybe. Or like I suggest to people, when you watch television, watch television. Watch out for it and learn to switch off stuff. I don't know, if you have any thoughts on any of that? We're going to talk about a couple other things before we move on to another invention here. And it's no simple answer. I know that. This kind of concerned me, maybe to you. I have a friend who has 6 kids, and he believes, and I think he might be right, that television kills creativity. He would notice, he would watch his kids, and they'd get antsy, and they want to do something, then they'd get bored, and instead of the stick becoming a car, or the Porsche becoming a ship, they go to this machine and turn it on, and it's creative for them. So right when that boredom was about to push them into a level of creativity, it gets shut down because this machine does it for us. It might be worth considering. And of course, video games are sometimes of a concern to people. One guy argues that the more machines we have, the less skills we have. And the less machines we have, the more you'll find skillful people. People who know a trade, a craft, things like that. Television shapes our humor. I don't know if you know that the laughing that you hear on some of the shows, that's not real. They say filmed in front of a live studio audience. A lot of that is recorded and put in by a producer at certain points. And it's because the stuff isn't funny. So they're telling you when to laugh. You listen for it. It's kind of creepy if you think about it. Can you imagine watching a dramatic show and there'd be people crying in the background or gasping, almost like a melodrama? But they know what they're doing. They're saying, okay, laugh at this now. And a lot of the stuff we're laughing at is offensive to our Father. I have found myself in the past saying, oh, that's really funny. And then I stop and think, well, wait a second. This is completely antagonistic to everything my Father stands for. There should be some hesitation. I believe that that's the case. I had a teacher who said, if they can get you to laugh at it, you're one step closer to accepting it. And we all know there's an agenda out there for various things, various corruptions and sins out there. And that's what happens is you laugh about it and you're made to feel unkind if you say anything against it. I have something else coming, but I want to pause again if there's anything that you've noticed. It's changing fast. Like we talked about, it's almost impossible to keep track of the trends. Wanted to point this out because this kind of hit me right between the eyes. Television interferes. It can bring, you know, families together, but it can also separate us. I remember it seemed like when I was growing up, moms, especially mine, had an uncanny knack for knowing the key moment of the show you're watching to walk in and interrupt it. It's like, and the killer is, and Brett, can you come as well? Ah, what do you, you know, I would get, you know, respectfully, get very upset. I don't know if moms go into training for that, but they know exactly when to interrupt the show. And years later, it finally hit me. So how dare you? So you know what? She's not interrupting the show. That show is interrupting your mom. It's interrupting life. How dare you let a stupid show interfere with life? And I think that happens a lot. We're just like, okay, one more thing. And all of life has to shut down while we watch stuff. It might be worth taking notice of. Okay. I'm going to suggest one other thing. We're not going to just talk about television tonight. But I want to point out something that might be of concern. TV affects the way we think. I know anybody who steps up like from the beginning and say, well, television rots your brain, say yes, and pat them on the head, say, you go along and play. But there may be something to it to a certain extent. I don't know if you ever thought about this before, but did you know, you ever notice that God commanded the people? It wasn't just about making images of false gods. He didn't want them to make an image of him. Did you ever catch that? It's in Deuteronomy 4. For the sake of time, I'll just give you the reference. It's Deuteronomy 4, 12 through 16. It says, I don't want you to make an image of me. I don't know if you realize that when they made the golden calf, they weren't worshiping a false god. They were worshiping God falsely. It says, don't make an image of me. And the issue may be, is that he was requiring them to think abstractly, because as soon as you make something concrete, not like the sidewalk, but more substantial, you make it less. And I'll give you an example. And this, spiritually, this is significant. Like if I held up some money, that's a concrete image, a concrete idea. Here's a $20 bill. Anybody can look at that image and say, okay, money. But if I'm telling you about integrity, that's an abstract concept. I can't show you a handful of integrity. I could use the money to demonstrate that concept, but it's a higher level, isn't it? There's concrete thinking, just plain old images. It's right there in front of you. But honesty and love and bravery, those are abstract concepts. And you'll notice that that's where the important stuff lives. So if we live down here, then that could be an issue for a Christian. And the argument is, and I want you to know, there's people in the world, there's Christians that are concerned about this. Even the lesser thinkers, so to speak, in the world are catching on to this. You'll notice that television is all about images. It's not about words, it's about images. One of the things that one guy said is a symptom of our culture. When I say Albert Einstein or John F. Kennedy, you see a picture. You don't think about the concepts that they believed in. You don't know that much. I mean, you might if you're a history buff, but for the most part, you mention these names to people, they see a picture. That's what we see. We live in an image-driven society, and one argument is that television began that. Now stick with me, and I think you'll see why this is important. We even see it in books. How do you know the difference between a book that's written for adults and a book that's written for my nephew, Atticus, who is just a little past one or two? What's the difference?
Pictures.
Pictures. Lots and lots of pictures, very few words. Then as it progresses, what happens? It's more abstract thing. And that does not mean if you were reading a book at home and there's pictures in it, I'm not knocking that at all. But you'll notice that the less pictures there are, that means your brain is reaching for higher or abstract thinking. In fact, we even say that. Do I have to draw a picture for you? And that means that you're not aspiring to a higher level of thinking. And by the way, we're not talking about smarts. Who cares about that? Some of the biggest fools I ever met were professors in college. So we're not talking about getting your degree and stuff like that. I'm a big fan of education. I'm a teacher. But sometimes we get caught up in the letters after people's names and think that they have all the wisdom in the world. We're not talking about that. We're talking about just clear-headed thinking. This is the concern. If you remain at this literal level, and you do not pursue what integrity is and things like that, there's going to be problems spiritually, and I'll explain why. Here's 2 Corinthians 4. Somebody over here was going to read earlier. I'll have you read that. 2 Corinthians 4:18. If you have that.
2 Corinthians 4 what?
4:18.
As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are unseen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal.
Okay, and then so everything that is temporary can be seen, is concrete. Everything that's forever and matters is abstract, it's unseen. Ephesians 6:12 says, "For our struggle is not against flesh and blood." You've read that before. So here's the point. Our whole battle, our whole struggle for the struggle for our souls is here. And if television is nurturing this lesser kind of thinking, and not aspiring to deeper thinking, that's a problem. If we're wallowing down in this circus of images, sometimes that could be of concern, let alone all the other stuff that's going on with television.
And those images create concepts in children's minds.
No doubt.
Do not go away.
Yep.
They get that concept that this is okay. It's okay to sit there and drink until you're drunk.
It's funny.
Yeah, because yeah. It's funny.
Right. No, you're very, I think you're exactly right. Another school I taught at, it was a school for dropouts, and so I met some interesting guys, and I talked to one of the students, I can't remember how it came up, but I suggested, well, actually, cussing is wrong, and he was flabbergasted. He'd never heard of such a thing. He was very offended that I would think that, you know, cussing at all would be wrong at all. It didn't even dawn on him that that might even be a possibility. I'm not going to blame television necessarily. But you think about it, these stories are well done. I also have the opinion that TV teaches us to be discontent. We are constantly watching the lives of other people, made up lives, and don't fool yourself. There's no such thing as reality TV. It's not reality TV. Half the stuff is is produced and directed and shaped by the people involved. But even the genuine stuff, you put a camera there, they're not going to act the same as otherwise without the camera. It affects the result. Anyway, that I think that kind of concerns me the most.
Huh. You wonder if, atheism, like the founding principles of atheism is a lot of it's based on observable science.
Here you go.
That's what the only thing that they can focus on is things that they can observe now, that and they base their whole lifestyle on things that they can observe at this present time.
Yeah, I think they might argue to say, well, we have some abstract thinking, but I think you're right. They're kind of locked into this arena of their imagination and saying, no, can't be this, can't be a creator. So they dismiss any evidence that suggests that. So I think you're on track there. That's a good point.
I've been noticing more and more that TV's getting violent.
Yeah,
that.
The bottom line is to keep you watching and... I'm sure you've heard different things about desensitization, which is hard to say, but the idea that, you have to have more than it was before. What shocked people a generation ago doesn't shock us, and so they have to turn up the volume. They have to top themselves all the time. So I'm going to share something with you that's very relevant to us as Christians, and it has everything to do with what Jesus did all the time. And to lead up to that, I want to tell you something. One of the things that one argument about television that some people say is of concern is that it has trained us to expect to be amused all the time. That if it's not amusing, it's irrelevant. Whether it's true or not is irrelevant. The only thing that matters, the bottom line, is can you dance to it? Does it have a nice snappy beat? Is it flashy and dazzly enough to keep my attention? We are trained to think that we are to be amused, that that's why we're here. People didn't talk about being bored a few generations ago, and yet that's the ultimate faux pas nowadays. I've seen many, many cases where religious movements are all about keeping the people entertained. Whether or not God is treated with reverence or not seems to not even cross their minds. I'm going to look at Matthew 13. And I remember thinking this for a long time, and I think last time I was here, we kind of talked about this, so I apologize for the repetition, but maybe you had some thoughts about this. I always thought parables where Jesus would tell a story, and he always used parables, always. Every time he spoke, it says he used a parable. So it's almost what defined him. I always thought it was him pointing at images, say, see this sheep here? Or see if a wise man built his house upon something like the sand right here, that he was kind of simplifying it, dumbing it down and taking him by the hand, say, let me walk you through this and I'll make it easy for you using common everyday objects. That's not what was going on. Now that may very well have been one aspect of it, but I think you'll find why when Jesus talks about it in Matthew 13:10, they ask him straight out, why do you speak to them in parables? Matthew 13, verse 13 says, therefore I speak to them in parables, because while seeing, they do not see, and while hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand. And then jump down to verse 14 through 16. He says, this people has become dull. Now, I don't know if you notice this. You know the parable of the soils, the four kinds of soils? There's two parts to that. He tells all the people, well, there's this soil, and the four. And then everybody leaves. Only the disciples stay for part two, which is the explanation. Everybody else, that day, as far as they're concerned, they heard this guy talking about dirt. Oh, I don't get it. And they walked away. And the disciples stay. This is in Matthew 13. Says, what does this mean? Says, I'll tell you what it means. Says, this soil represents this kind of person, and so on. Parables, you know what parables were? It was a filter to separate the men from the boys. It was a gate. It was a process that separated the ones who are just sort of looking for the truth from the ones who are really looking. There were the ones who just heard the surface, the concrete, and they left. The ones who stuck around and did the deeper thinking, said, what does this mean? Let's dig a little deeper. That's the ones who ended up following Jesus. And I think we miss that sometimes with the parables. I don't want to make it sound like he was playing games, but God promises us, you will search me for me and you will find me if you search with your whole heart. If you search with part of your heart, you will not find him. Any thoughts on that? I'm struck time and time again when Jesus tells something to people and they walk away and he doesn't chase after them and say, let me water this down for you a little bit and make it a little bit more marketable and maybe something more snappy to kind of lure you in closer. He says, here's the truth. It's yours if you want it. And some people suggested television, among other things, kind of helps us in the wrong direction. I'm going to give you a couple quotes. You've probably heard some of this. Any thoughts on any of this before we keep going? I promise you we're not going to just talk about television. Okay. You've probably heard this before. This is a poet in the first or second century. He's talking about the people of the empire. This is what he said about the people. And I can't help but think that it fits today. In fact, many people think it does. The people, this is this guy talking about society. The people who once upon a time handed out military command, high civil office, legions, everything, now restrains itself and anxiously hopes for just two things, bread and circuses. This formula offered a variety of pleasures such as the distribution of food, public baths, gladiators, exotic animals, chariot races, sports competition, and theater representation. It was an efficient instrument in the hands of the emperors to keep the population peaceful. Now, I'm not suggesting there's a conspiracy, but I'm saying that you talk to your average, regular, everyday person, all I want, feed me and entertain me. Bread and circuses. I got enough to eat? What's on tonight? I'm done. And then here you come. You know this is not all there is, right? This life comes to an end. Shouldn't we talk about that? Say, hey, I've got something to eat. What's on tonight? It's bread and circuses, for the most part. All the more of an opportunity for a Christian to maybe be the one that's not just about that. So that could be of concern. Let me tell you something. I just learned this recently, and it kind of startled me when somebody pointed it out. That word amuse, you mentioned atheists. You probably thought about it. You can picture the word right here because you were abstract thinkers. So picture the word atheist right here. You take off the word, the letter A, you have the word theist. A theist is somebody who believes in God. You put an A in front of it, that means not. It means they're not that. So an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in God. That A in front of the word, that's what it does to the word. Muse, M-U-S-E, means think. You do the math. Amuse literally means not think. So I'm not saying being amused is wrong, but if that's all your life is moving from one amusement to the next, that's a problem.